you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the Next Pats podcast. I'm Phil Perry, and it is the Next Pats time of year, my friends, because their season is over, and that means we are looking ahead. We are looking to what is next. We are looking to how this roster can improve, the draft, free agency. What can they do with the bodies already on the roster? One body in particular that we will be focusing on for the next several months in Mac Jones to make sure that this team is better in 2022 than it was in 2021. Obviously, a disappointing season at the end for the Patriots to lose for their last five and to not be able to get a single stop against the Bills in the wild card round. That will color our offseason discussion all offseason. What do they do? What should be the priority? Should it be defensively to make sure that they get some studs, they get some athletes to be able to run and track Josh Allen? Because you have to not only face that guy twice a year, but you have to defeat that guy and be better than him in his Buffalo Bills if you want to be hosting playoff games in the near future here. Or is it better to add on the offensive side and just try to keep pace on the scoreboard with those guys? And not just those guys, but with the Kansas City Chiefs, with the Cincinnati Bengals, teams that look like they'll be near the top of the conference as well for the foreseeable future, but really don't do it on the defensive side. The Bills are great on both sides of the ball right now. Don't get me wrong. But the Chiefs, they're 24th in defensive DVOA this year. They're going to be right there at the end. The Bengals, they've already advanced to the divisional round with a second-year quarterback in the postseason for the first time. They were 19th in defensive DVOA this season. So you can get by with a mediocre defense if your offense is elite. And so that, to me, is the question. Do you chase the elite offense this offseason by adding a weapon, whether it's in the draft, via trade, or through free agency? Or do you look to that defense and say, we have so many holes there, we have to get that figured out? The offense wasn't bad, and it wasn't near the top of the league in terms of points scored, very efficient and plenty of different metrics, run game, pass game for a vast majority of the season. They were one of the best teams in terms of third and long situations. They were one of the best teams in terms of creating explosive plays through the air, even though those weren't necessarily long passes down the field. A lot of those were catch and run plays, but hey, that's the NFL in 2021. You get a lot of defenses that are guarding against the deep throw. And so if you can dump it off to your guys and create explosive gains that way, you're okay. 20 yards is 20 yards, right? We'll get into that discussion as well as the season goes on. But I thought this would be a good opportunity, our first Next Pats podcast after the 2021 season, and look ahead in a couple of different ways. Number one, let's focus in on Mac Jones. And let's set a plan for Mac Jones. Let's just have some fun with this thing and see if we can lay out a plan that maximizes Mac Jones's ability to make that year one to year two leap. And it can cover all sorts of different bases, whether it's adding personnel around him, an idea that I like very much, and we'll dig into that further week after week after week here, whether it's strength and conditioning, which of course has merit as well, or whether it's schematic. Maybe the Patriots need to change some of the things they do offensively to better fit Mac Jones, or Mac Jones maybe has to do some things this offseason in order to get more comfortable with what the Patriots are asking him to do going from year one to year two. So I think this is a great discussion for us to have. We're also going to look at the cap because that matters. We're not going to give people a headache in terms of asking you to do advanced calculus on the podcast while you're walking around your house doing chores, or you're out at the grocery store while you're in your car sitting in traffic, because nobody wants to do that. I understand that. But we are going to speak briefly with Miguel Benzan from @PatsCap on Twitter. I'm sure you follow him. If you don't follow him, make sure you do, because he is more on top of this Patriots cap situation than anybody. And we're going to talk to him in terms of what can the Patriots do this offseason? What are their limitations? How much cap space do they actually have? And if they need some, how do they go about acquiring it? So we'll talk to Miguel, but first we're going to talk to our buddy, Mark Schofield, Touchdown Wire, USA Today. Nobody studies these quarterbacks around the league more closely than Mark. Mark has watched Mac Jones especially closely all year long. The guy's posting YouTube videos on Mac Jones throws week after week after week. He's writing about him all the time. So nobody better to talk about this Mac Jones plan, this offseason plan for the Patriots' new quarterback than Mark Schofield. Let's get to our discussion with Mark right now, and then we'll talk to Miguel and talk some cap. All right, very excited now to have our friend Mark Schofield, USA Today, Touchdown Wire, back with us on Next Pats to talk a little bit of Mac Jones. Mark, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, buddy. Obviously a little bit of a disappointing weekend. We talked a little bit about that before we hit record, but we look to the future. We look ahead. We think about Mac Jones and where this team can go in the next season to come. And I'm excited about that. Excited to catch up with you a little bit. Looking fantastic as always, my friend.
Oh, stop it. I'm just trying to keep up with you. I want to know how many hours of Mac Jones tape was consumed by Mark Schofield this year, because you watch these guys as closely as anybody. It's not just Mac Jones. You're watching everybody across the league, but you were doing every week. You were updating your YouTube channel with Mac Jones throws. You were all over this guy all season long. So, I mean, how many weeks of your life was spent investigating this particular player?
A pretty substantial chunk of my life, which is probably okay, because it keeps you away from playing video games and things like that. Things where, you know, you don't need that kind of distraction. And so I was really able to dive into him each week. And I will say, Phil, it was very fascinating and, you know, to see his development over the course of the season. Because at the start of the year, I know you asked me, a lot of other people asked me, what do you want to see from Mac Jones? And I basically said, simplified answer, you know, bumper sticker kind of answer. I want to see him be better at the end of the year than he was at the start of the year. And I think he proved that. I think he did that. I think if you watch the course of his rookie season, you saw him over the, you know, the final stretch of the season, middle of the season, doing some things that showed you the improvement. And he also, I think, answered some, not all, but some of the questions that people, myself included, had about him coming into the draft from an athletic profile standpoint, from a can he maneuver in the pocket and extend plays with his leg standpoint. I thought he was very impressive in that regard, even in Saturday night's loss. And so, yeah, I watched a ton of Mac Jones this year, and I was very excited, frankly, about what I saw.
Okay, tell us where you felt he got better, because I think what a lot of people are thinking about Mac Jones right now is they're hoping for some kind of leap year one to year two. And he kind of just checked a lot of boxes, I think, for people that they already had laid out for him before the season even started, right? So they knew Mac Jones was going to be an accurate quarterback, and he was. They knew he was going to be a smart quarterback, and he was, and make good decisions. And for the most part, he did. Everybody else also kind of knew, you know, he's not got the strongest arm in the world, so he didn't blow anybody away in that regard. And he's not the greatest athlete, though, like you just mentioned. I think he did show at times that he's got plenty of mobility. He's not a statue back there. You saw him scramble around for first downs in some big games against some good defenses. And you saw him move in the pocket a little bit as well. He's never going to be, you know, Russell Wilson or Lamar Jackson, but he's got a little bit of juice there. Where did you see him improve the most? Because I think it just kind of felt like, especially because the season ended the way it did, Mark, with some turnovers, some bad decisions. I'm not sure people saw the same improvement you did. So you tell us, where did you see him get better?
Yeah, I mean, I think you start with that athleticism and pocket management skill set, which I think is an area he certainly showed improvement over the course of the year, and showed that for all the questions that people had about, is he athletic enough to play in today's NFL? Can he survive in the face of some of the athletic defenses, defensive lines, defensive fronts you're going to see in the NFL? Yes, he absolutely can. He showed you not only can he have the footwork to move around in the pocket and keep plays alive within the confines of the pocket, but he can make plays outside. He can make plays on the edges. There were some moments this season where he would drop back and see man coverage, see a little bit of grass and say, you know what? I can pick this up with my legs. And certainly he's not the athlete that Josh Allen is per se, but when he can give you that, that's huge for an offense. That's huge to have that ability where you can get 6 yards on third and five with the quarterback scrambling. So I think that's an area where he improved. Another area where I think he improved was that ability to manipulate defenders downfield. Now, it's still a skill set he's rounding out, but that's not something he needed to do a ton of at Alabama. thrown to a lot of wide open receivers, didn't really need to move safeties, move linebackers underneath. He started to round that out. Now, I know people will point to the interception that Micah Hyde had and the pump fake and things like that. I know JT O'Sullivan did a fantastic video about that, when to pump versus when not to. And so maybe he didn't do it in a perfect way on that one play. But over the course of the year, he got better at moving defenders. He got better at getting guys out of position. And that's such a small part of playing quarterback, but it's critical. When you can get a defender to do something he's not supposed to do, when you can move a defender to say, come down on the over route and then throw the post route over his head, that's critical for an offensive and its ability to generate explosive plays. And so that's an area where I think he also showed improvement, which is going to be huge for this offense going forward.
What's interesting with his ability to do that, I'm with you. I think he did get a little bit better at that. We saw flashes of it. I remember in, you know, training camp and some of these preseason games, like the Philly game is one that stands out to me, where you see like a little shoulder shimmy, like a little bit of an open up of the shoulders, and that gets a linebacker to move and he makes a throw. And we saw things like that. I was like, man, this guy is pretty advanced. It felt like late in the year, he got so focused on doing that at times that, and doing it quickly, that when he would come back to actually make the throw was basically forced and it was coming out no matter what. And so you saw things like the pick six to the Dolphins and you know, maybe the Darius Leonard pick, you know, same kind of deal where he's looking one way and, you know, he's probably trying to look somebody off, look him off, come back and throw nice and fast.
Yeah.
And when you make that decision, you know, sometimes there are people there that you weren't expecting to be there. Right. So it is, it's one of those things, I'm sure, Mark, that there's plenty for him to iron out as well. Is there something at the top of your list that you would say this offseason, when it comes to his play on the field, he has to get better at X?
I mean, I do think it starts with the sort of arm strength velocity question. And I know that's sort of been something that people have harped on, and I can understand that it was a question about Jones coming out, you know, but next year and the year after, I want to see him add just a little bit more velocity on throws to give him that ability to attack those downfield windows. When I was sitting down getting ready for this game, thinking about what the Bills had to do, my mind kept flashing back to Carl Scott, who used to be the secondary coach at Alabama, now the secondary coach, defensive backs coach with the Minnesota Vikings. And he had a great clinic about how Alabama runs their, you know, quarters coverage, their four deep coverage. And he talked about what you want to do from a defensive standpoint is force the quarterback to make what he called those scholarship throws, the deep out, the deep corner. Like, you know, if the opponent is going to beat you making those throws, fine, you tip your hat. But if he's going to like beat you, covering you up underneath, you know, that's a problem from a defensive coverage standpoint. Defenses want to force Mac Jones right now to make those scholarship throws. He can do it with his mind. He can do it with anticipation. But when you add in that extra layer of just a little bit more velocity, just a little bit more, you know, arm strength, so you can put those throws in, but now velocity and timing and anticipation, that's really tough. That gives you the ability to make those scholarship throws. It makes you a lot tougher to defend from a coverage standpoint, because now you've got to cover every blade of grass. You can't give up those outside boundaries because the quarterback can hit them. So that's at the top of my offseason to-do list for Mac Jones. Can he do it? Absolutely. We've seen quarterbacks add velocity, you know, strength and conditioning coach. I talked to some people that were covering Mac Jones getting ready for this game last weekend, saying he looks tight right now. You know, he doesn't have a fluid throw in motion, doesn't seem to generate enough power and torque with his upper body through his hips and into the lower body. If he could sort of loosen it up, get more torque in the upper body, he'll generate that velocity. If he adds that to the bag, so to speak, Phil, I mean, he's going to be a very good quarterback. He's already a good quarterback for sort of a rookie, you know, graded him on that scale. But if he can add that velocity, make it tougher to defend him, now you're going to start thinking about playing different coverages. That's going to be impressive to see. That's what I want to see from him in year two.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, and that downfield ability would be helped by maybe adding a piece or two to help him down the field, right? You got 37 catches from Nelson Agholor, and, you know, certainly he has the ability to occasionally make some of those scholarship throws. I love that term, by the way.
Scholarship I love it. I borrow it all the time. I'm always clear to, like, attribute it to Kyle Scott, because I mean, it's a great phrase.
Do we have to come up with one? Do we have to come up with one for the NFL? Like, does it have to be like, you know, I almost
second
like
contract throw.
Yeah, second contract throw, like a max contract throw. Although I don't think they, you know, they don't have max contracts in the NFL. You can get as much as you want. But yeah,
fifth year option
contract throw. I like that. So a fifth year option throw might be kind of like, you know, somewhere in the middle there, because if
I like that. Fifth year option throw is like, you know, the throws that you're supposed to make, but maybe a little bit deeper downfield. That second contract throw, that's the NFL version of a scholarship throw.
Because if you're getting all the way to your fifth year option, if you're Baker Mayfield, like, we've got some questions about you. You know, you're not the cream of the crop there. I love that term. And so maybe we've come up with another one for the NFL. But I think this brings us to our next topic here, because we're talking about maybe adding a piece and adding a weapon to force teams to defend the Patriots down the field. It is fascinating, Mark. Some of the numbers that have come out now, obviously the regular season is over, you know, passing yards around the league, yards per game passing dipped below 250 for the first time since 2013, just the second time since 2013. These numbers are from PFF. The average depth of target was the lowest it's been since 2007. So what's happening around the league? Defenses are taking away the explosive plays and forcing offenses to check it down. But what's interesting about watching this Patriots team is that nobody plays the Patriots too high. Nope. Because if you do that, you're opening up all kinds of running room for them to hand it off. And that's what the Patriots want to do. Ivan Fierce told us earlier in the year, because we were asking, it was just sort of becoming a topic of conversation. I had asked Robert Saleh about it. He gave a great answer. And it was, you know, we're kind of talking about the evolution of defense across the NFL. And someone asked him about too high safety looks. And he said, nobody ever plays us too high. And you know, of course they do probably, you know, there's some percentage of looks that they saw in those, you know, facing those too high safety shells. But because the defense are a running team, they didn't get maybe the benefit in the run game that some of these other teams would, because the run game numbers are up across the league, but maybe they didn't get that benefit, even though they were a pretty good running team, because they don't really threaten down the field the same way some of these other teams do. So this brings us to our Mark Schofield 3-point plan to max out Mac Jones this offseason plan, I guess is what we're going to call that. That just rolls right off the tongue.
Phil.
Yeah. So you already mentioned, you know, let's work on the arm strength for him. So let's, you know, we can include that as one of your 3 points. Yep. Give us your next point in the Mac Jones second year leap plan that you have devised for this guy.
And I think you kind of sort of teed it up there, Phil. There's sort of a conceptual schematic element here, because I know that the big phrase, the four letters, average depth of target, ADOT, have been talked about with respect to Mac Jones. I found it interesting using some PFF data. His average depth of target on non-play action plays was 9.6 yards downfield, which is not too bad. On non-play action plays, it was 8.5. Play action plays, it was 9.6. And so I might have had that flipped. I need to look back at this, because I don't want to screw this up here, because it's a very critical point.
We can Adam brain Adam JC, if he's not researching video games right now, he'll be able to come back to this and we can lop this
average
off.
Depth of target on non-play action plays was 8.5, and on play action plays it was 7.6. That's what it was. So when they go play action, he's kind of throwing it down underneath. He's not attacking downfield. And if you think back to when I was on with you earlier this year, right after they drafted him, you know, what do you want to see? And I talked about the elements of the Alabama offense. When he went play action, when he went RPO, he was attacking downfield. He's kind of flipped it this year. He's attacking downfield almost off of schemed shot plays where, you know, we're just going to go vertical off of this. But when it's play action, he's checking it down. He's throwing underneath. He's throwing those crossers, which are a core component of their offense. Don't get me wrong, but I'd like to see him off of play action in the year ahead, be able to attack more downfield. Now, maybe it gets us to the arm strength component of it and those second contract throws, but I'd like to see off of the play action game, a bit more vertical element to it. He had opportunities to make some of those throws, and it seemed like he took the layups. You know, he'd have that post over, he'd have the like corner over and things like that. And he'd throw the underneath route. It didn't give the vertical route a chance. Maybe in year two, he feels more comfortable throwing those. So that's what I'd want to see. That's number one. And number two, you know, Dante Skarneckery talked about it yesterday, getting him his binky. I do think that's a critical component for any young quarterback. And I'm curious how they handle it. Do they look at, say, a guy like a Drake London from USC, who I think is that sort of bigger bodied X-type receiver who could win on the boundary? There's going to be a lot of discussion about, oh, he's a contested catch guy. Is he just N'Keal Harry again? Like, I think he can separate better than he's getting credit for right now. And Phil, I think as the draft process goes along, people are going to see him beating press alignment at the line of scrimmage, winning on slant routes early in the down. He's not just a guy that, you know, you throw him back shoulder throws. That's all he can do in college. I know, like, the trepidation about a contested catch receiver coming out of college, it's just a nice way of saying it's a guy that can't separate. So I think Drake London would be an interesting piece. Or do they do what we're seeing some other teams do, what the Cincinnati Bengals, who were playing this weekend, did? Pair him with an old teammate. Do we see a Jameson Williams? I know Mel Kiper Jr. just put out a mock draft of Jameson Williams to the New England Patriots in the first round, or maybe a John Metchie third in the second round. He's probably going to fall a little bit. I know both players have the injuries, but Williams seems to be a little bit higher on big boards right now. Get Mac Jones somebody he's already got that chemistry with, somebody he's already familiar with. So when it's third and seven, he knows where Metchie's going to be, or he knows where Williams is going to be. He can put a back shoulder throw onto the outside shoulder and get a completion and move the chains. Give him somebody. He's got that level of trust built in. We've seen teams do it. You know, the Bengals did it. The Dolphins did it with Tua and Waddle. The Eagles did it with Hurts and Devonta Smith. Is this going to be part of a growing trend where you're trying to give a young quarterback that receiver he's got that established chemistry with, and do the Patriots follow suit with a Williams or a Metchie? And so I think that's another big piece, Phil. Give him his binky, because then you've got the trickle-down effect. You've got Myers working more out of the slot, seeing more, you know, slot coverage, CB2, CB3 types. You've got that big piece on the outside that you might want to roll coverage to. Maybe you get them into those two high looks because you're worried about that guy on the outside. It lightens up the box a little bit. I think that's another component. Getting Mac Jones his binky in whatever form that takes, that starts opening up some doors for this offense.
I love that. I think it's critical that they add somewhere, you know,
right.
I think that the discussion is really interesting. Do you get the outside the numbers guy? You know, do you get the, whether it's Drake London or Jameson Williams or, you know,
Treylon Burks,
sure. That's a great one, right? You know, I like him too. And the ability there, especially when we're watching, you know, Deebo Samuel just go off week after week after week. And I don't know if Treylon Burks is going to be able to do the same things. Deebo Samuel is a great player, but he's a big bodied guy who's got some speed and athleticism to him, which should make him hard to bring down after the catch. So do you go after that guy, or do you go after, you know, on day three, you know, Slade Bolden from Alabama?
Know.
You know, there's a guy he really does have some chemistry with. You know, I like the Metchie example. I love Williams too. I don't think he's worked with Williams yet, Mark, but
right,
in terms of you know, being able to speak the same language, he would at least know, you know, the offense that Williams has been in. And hey, in our offense, this, you know, what you had there with Billy O, that's this here. And, you know, and you're off and running whenever he can get healthy. But that I think would be interesting. If you could pick one, would you go slot or would you go true X? Because
I mean,
I think there's merit in both arguments there.
And so the argument might be you do both. I mean, if you're thinking about slot receivers, they get pushed down boards because of the ability to have that two-way go. It's a little bit easier to get that release and to get leverage off the line of scrimmage. And so those players sort of slide into day three. So you could go London early and Slade a little bit later in the draft. You could add both of those components, because then you're looking at an 11 personnel package where you've potentially got Bolden at the slot, you got Slade at the slot, Myers on the outside, London on the outside, or Williams on the outside, or Metchie on the outside. You know, that's an 11 personnel package that I think could work really well. You know, and then we start getting into, why didn't they use enough 12? You get the two tight ends. They used it a ton in week one and really sort of got away from it. You know, why don't they do more of that? You know, maybe we see more of that here in year two. Maybe they feel a little bit more comfortable with Mac. You know, teams will play them in base when they go 12 and two tight ends. And so maybe we see a little bit of that way. But I think, Phil, you can do both. You know, because of the way the slot position is valued in today's NFL, we see those guys sort of slide a bit to day two, late day two, day three. You can address, you know, the outside early, inside late.
I like that. And so, okay, let's recap. But I do have one more question for you before we let you go. But we're going to recap. So the Mark Schofield plan to max out Mac Jones from year one to year two to help him make that leap. All of these words are capitalized. This is an official title.
Official actor.
The 3-point plan. Okay, get stronger, which I like. Yep. I think we can all get behind that. Yep. You know, so you get a little bit more velocity there to work with, give you a little bit more leeway. Be willing to attack, or maybe this is partly on the Patriots. Give him looks,
opportunities to attack downfield,
opportunities to attack downfield. And number three is get the binky. But number two is the one I want to come back to. Is this more on the Patriots? Should they be incorporating? I remember that conversation we had right after they drafted him. I think you were anticipating that they would have some of this stuff in their playbook for 2021, you know, the RPO stuff, which we really didn't see at all. I mean, they maybe ran a handful of them all year, Mark. So is that more on the Patriots, or is that more on Mac Jones and just the willingness to push it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, McDaniels, and I know he talked about it with you guys. He basically said, look, RPOs, that's not what we do. And so I'm kind of taking the RPO piece and putting it to the side.
Okay.
You know, he had options available to him in the downfield passing game on play action, on non-play action throws, traditional dropback throws. And he seemed more comfortable at times sort of working underneath, working to the intermediate areas of the field. And then there were also some moments where I felt like he perhaps actually forced someone's downfield just to feel like, or say that he did it. Just, look, I had this. Like, I remember one play where he had N'Keal Harry on the deep post, Myers on the underneath, and he had Myers wide open. He said, no, I'm going to throw it back away from you. It's almost like, ooh, I got this play called. I really want to hit this one. And it didn't quite come together. So the Patriots gave him some options. Sometimes he took them, sometimes he didn't. I just want to see him take those more consistently, take those chances downfield more consistently. And I think with the improved strength, velocity, adding a little bit, again, the arm is NFL average, I'd say. You just need that little bit more. He doesn't need to have Josh Allen's arm or anything like that, but just bump up the velocity a little bit more. I think that's going to pay huge dividends for him and this offense in the future.
Proof that great minds think alike, Mark. We had Hall of Famer Kurt Warner on the podcast last week, and he's echoing exactly what your number two point is. So I love it. You know, the willingness, the ability, the aggressiveness to be able to let that play develop. And then when it's there, take the shot.
Yeah.
Don't be so quick maybe to get to your check down. Completions are good. Staying ahead of the chains is good, but there are plays that are available to you that you need to hit to beat good teams.
Right. And you need to hit them, or at least show that you're willing to take them, to get them to play you that too high look. So then you lighten up the box a little bit and free up where we know the Patriots right now want to be, which is work underneath in the passing game, run the football with the offensive line and the running backs that they have. I mean, that's where they want to be. And that's probably where they'll start out next season. And if you can lighten the box with what you're doing with your arm and that willingness to attack downfield, you can't play this position scared. If you do that, you've opened up so many doors and so many pages to that playbook.
All right, Mark Schofield, hopefully the Patriots send you a nice little consulting, you know, the consulting fee, consulting stipend there, because we've got a strength and conditioning component to the Mac Jones plan. We have a decision-making component to the Mac Jones plan, and we have a team building component.
We're trying to check all the boxes.
So we've got the strength and conditioning staff is listening right now, the coaching staff and the front office. And we have just figured out the best way to maximize Mac Jones going from year one to year two. Nobody better than Mark Schofield for us to talk to when it comes to quarterback play. So Mark, thank you for talking a little bit of Mac Jones with us this afternoon.
Anytime, my friend, always a blast.
All right, very happy now to have our buddy Miguel Benzin with us at PatsCap on Twitter. You know him, you love him, you already follow him. And if you don't, what are you doing? Go do that
exactly.
Right now. Miguel, thank you for being with us, buddy. Appreciate you.
No problem.
All right, so Miguel, you're tremendous with your cap insights on the Patriots. And I just want to go to your page right now to get the most updated figure. But I believe the last I saw was that the Patriots have just a shade over $3
million. Yes.
In salary cap space?
Yeah, that's including, I'm projecting a second round 10 of the Jacoby Myers and original talent round 10 of the Jacob Johnson. So those, that's why it's a little bit lower than everybody else, because I'm projecting those numbers.
It is a little bit lower than, you know, I know the site that I use a lot, because their ability with their site all the time is over the cap, right?
Yeah,
over the cap.
I can split one reason that there's different is I've counted for Jake Bailey
and things like that.
No, they addressed the incentives just yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Yesterday morning. But Jake Bailey earned his proven performance escalator. So okay. He increases this salary by from $965,000 to $3.986 million, which is the same level the second round tender. That's the biggest difference.
Okay.
And then they have not yet adjusted for the players who have not earned, who didn't play every game last year, who had active roster bonuses.
Got it. Okay. So the difference in figures is about 10 million. If you're following, if you follow Miguel and if you check over the cap,
yeah,
that's why the difference. So that's number one.
Right.
To me, number two is that seems like a shockingly low number, Miguel. $3.5 or $3-ish million. It's just compared to when you have 60 million or whatever it was last off season. It's a very stark contrast, right?
It is, because the main reason is because they carried over last from $19 million from 2020 to 2021. This year, $100,000. Biggest. That's the main reason.
And so this is kind of what you deal with now after you spend, you know, mm-hmm. record amounts last off season. I think the question that everybody is wondering now, though, is okay, $3.5 million. Like, they've got to have more than that to operate this off season.
Much more.
Right?
Much more.
I mean, you want to have you've said before you probably would like to have $3.5 million or so, maybe even more than that, going into the regular season. So after free agency and after training camp and after all of this stuff, you need about that much going into the fall of 2022. So here's the question.
Yes.
How do they clear space?
Okay. All right. You redo Matt Judon's deal. You push money into, so you convert most of his salary from 22 and push it out to next year. All right. Okay. I'm on my brunch break, but I can create about $50 million in cap space quickly.
Wow. Okay. So that's a good, even if you don't need to give us all the details, if you don't have them, but even right now, and that's without parting with, you know,
no, that's what parting with people. That's parting.
Okay,
with people.
That is parting with people. Okay, so let me. I'm looking at over the cap right now, and I'll just throw some names at you because, and I'm looking at pre-June 1 cuts.
Yes, yes.
Because that's what you need, right? You need money for free agency. If you're doing post-June 1, free agency is already come and gone, not helping you very much. Shaq Mason would free up about $7 million.
Yes.
Would he be somebody that you would consider?
I had him on my bottom of the list because I. As a possible cut, but he was on my list.
Okay, Kyle Van Noy. That looks like it's about.
He was also he was my last guy to get to the $47.8 million in cap space.
Okay, so that's those are two guys that are significant pieces to your team.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Lawrence Guy, I believe, is just a hair under $4 million.
I had him. I didn't touch his deal. I didn't even consider him. He has $1 million of his salary fully guaranteed, so it's very little cap savings on cutting him.
Okay. Who is the biggest name you would consider walking away from just in order to clear a significant chunk of space?
The biggest name would be Shaq.
Okay.
He would create the most cap space.
And the rest of the moves would be guys that, you know, like Devon Godshaw, I'm looking at, you'd be eating 5.2 in dead money. You'd be freeing up 5 in cap space. I mean, is that something that they would need to, are they going to carry a bunch of dead money next year just to free up enough space to operate this offseason?
I think the approach will be to push out money into next year, because next year they have very few players signed, and we don't know what the next year's cap number is going to be.
Right.
So I think they'll push out money, which it didn't do last year, and I think they'll push out money this year. If you could extend Garcia and create $2.7 million of cap space.
Okay, so that would be something to consider. If they like the way he played.
Yeah, if you like the way he played, I'd go that way. So, I literally, on this thing I'm looking at right now, folks, I have a column for Garcia, cut him, or again, the Garcia to extend him. Okay?
I mean, and listen – again, these are guys, the names that we've brought up, these are, you know, they're starting caliber players for them.
Yeah.
Nelson Aguilar would clear some space, but you'd also be eating a ton of dead money. I mean, it's $10 million in dead money, it looks like, Miguel.
Yeah. So
I mean, is that something they should consider?
It's the difference between extending him 1 year and cutting him is so close. So you got to decide. Like, if you extended Nelson Aguilar and doing that whole salary to signing bonus proration, you create $3.94 million of cap space. To cut them is around 4.2. All right. So that difference, you can decide, is that difference worth it? You decide, you decide what direction you want to go.
Well, but okay. So here's the issue, right? You could hold on to some of these names that we're talking about, but you're paying them down the road. So what kind of problems do you run into by doing it that way? The way you're describing, where you push money out, you mentioned, they're going to be getting more cap space. You know, the number could shoot up exponentially, you know, for next year. So maybe it doesn't end up mattering all that much, but what potential problems could you run into handling it that way?
With Judon, I don't think it's a problem, because I think the last five games was not indicative of his play. So I think I'm okay with pushing hell his cap number, because I still think his cap number is going to be a bargain to what the top edge rushers get in the league. All right. Okay. And with Aguilar, I'm only pushing it out 1 year. I'll be able to squeeze, you know, so that's only $4 million of cap of dead money. It's how much money you willing to eat, dead money you're going to willing to eat. You want to eat in 2022 with Nelson Aguilar or 2023? I prefer to do it in 2023, because they have a short window with Mac Jones on a rookie deal.
Right. And that, I think, looms over everything. Yes, you've got this young player who's incredibly he's an incredible value right now, because he's making so little and he's bringing so much to the table. If he's already, even if you're like me and you consider him a middle of the pack quarterback somewhere in, you know, 14, 15, 16 range.
Okay.
It's huge, huge value. The money that he's
incredible
getting.
Incredible value.
Right. Incredible, I mean, that's value. Kirk Cousins range. And we know what kind of money that guy's getting.
Yeah.
Compared to Mac Jones, it's absolutely microscopic. The salary he's pulling in. Miguel, the question I want to ask you before we let you go,
okay,
is about one particular player.
Yes.
Because I think he also is kind of looming over this offseason. JC Jackson, is doing a real deal with him feasible? Is it better than giving him the franchise tag because of the big time cap hit that would be for 1 year guaranteed? And which would you rather if you were Bill Belichick?
If I was Bill Belichick, I'd rather sign him to a long-term deal before free agency begins. If I need to tag him before the deadline on March 8th, I would do so. But then that would buy me some time to extend him before March 16th. The deadline, the overall deadline is July 15th, but I want that cap space on March 16th.
Okay. But to get him done before he gets to free agency, you got to give him, it's got to be probably $19 million a year. Are you cool with that?
I'm cool with, I think he's going to get top of the market at $20 million.
You think he's going to get 20? And you got to give him that. If he gets him from free agency, you definitely have to give him that to keep him away from the rest of the offense.
If he's not tagged, he's getting $20 million outside from some team on the NFL. To keep him, he probably agreed to a lesser amount. How much lesser it is.
You think?
I think he'll probably get 18, 19, whatever.
If he knows he's getting 20 out there somewhere else, he's going to come to them and say, hey, we can get this thing done, but for this to happen before I see these other offers, you're going to have to blow me away.
Phil, I'll disagree. He already knows.
He already knows
from last year when he was an RFA tender, those teams told him how much he was going to get paid if he played well in 2021. He already knows.
So he already knows. Well, I think it's going to be really hard to keep him from free agency. So I think it is probably going to end up being a franchise tag and then try to get something done with him.
Yeah. I think the Patriots, he's going to be the big one free agency signing. They used to have big five-year deals. It'll go, and last year was just for 4 years. I think they're going to sign him to a big five-year deal with a low cap number and for this year.
So you think you can get whatever you need to get done this offseason? You don't see the cap as being a huge prohibitive sort of factor in terms of their team building? Because you just told me $50 million. You could probably clear $50 million without parting ways with a huge piece.
I'm cutting players,
but it sounds like Shaq Mason and Kyle Van Noy.
Kyle Van Noy, Jonathan Jones.
Oh, okay. Jonathan Jones is in there. Okay.
If you want me to get the 50, I made some hard decisions, Phil.
Oh, you got to. You got to. I mean, and that's what we're talking about. I'm trying to see who else even could create a bunch of space for you, though.
There isn't, because they have so many players. They have who with guaranteed salary, Phil. Now, off the top of my head, I think they got $65 million in guaranteed salary, all right, this year. It's hard to create cap space because those guys have no reason to agree to a pay cut.
Right. So it's not going to be easy to get to 50.
No, it's not easy. It's not going to be easy for them to create cap space. So you got to make some tough cuts, or you got to push out a ton of money to the next year.
And do you think that you is 50 million? I mean,
I don't think
to get JC. Let me ask you this: to get JC Jackson tagged and add to your team the way they would like to, not with superstars, but to fill in some holes, what would be the number that they need to be operating with, you think? Does it have to get to 50, or could they
It doesn't have to get to 50, because the rookie, you'll depend on the rookie picks, your draft picks, just to make the team, therefore taking players off the roster who have higher salaries, right? It's going to probably be 35, Phil.
Okay.
So which means
between now and the start of free agency, clearing about $30 million in
space. I think it'll be 30.
All right. So Miguel, I don't want to keep you too long, because you've been so good to us, and you got to eat and you've got to work, and you have a day job. You are the man for joining us. But that is a good big picture takeaway for us.
All right.
Between now and the start of free agency, we're looking at these numbers and these players that you mentioned, whether it's Mason, Jones, Van Noy, whoever. You got to clear about $30 million in there if you want to keep Jason Jackson.
Yeah, Rob Kraft is going to be spending some money this year.
2 years in a row, baby.
2 years in a row.
Oh, but boy, who knows? Who would love to know how he feels about this this entire process that he's about to be facing down.
Yeah, I know that accounting talk is not going to be fun for him.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Miguel, thanks so much, man. We'll talk to you soon. No problem.
Bye-bye.
All right. Great stuff there from Miguel Benson at Pat's Cap. It's going to be difficult for the Patriots to get to where they want to go financially while also filling the holes that they have with players that you would want playing for your team and playing significant snaps for your team in 2022. You just heard Miguel talk about it. If you have to tag JC Jackson, and that's somewhere in the range of $17 million, you've only got about 3.5, it looks like, right now, based on Miguel's projections. You're talking about figuring out a way to clear 14-ish just to get JC Jackson back on the roster. You could get halfway there by releasing Shaq Mason, and then I guess you slide Mike Owenu into right guard. But if you do that, now what are you doing at right tackle? Because Trent Brown's a free agent, and he just made $9 million in base salary this past year, I believe it was. So you can make these difficult decisions. Kyle Van Noy would be a difficult decision. To me, he was one of their most important defenders this year. Starting caliber, outside linebacker, versatile guy, play off the line and on. Very valuable to this team. But he's a player that you look at and say, okay, if we can get by without him, we can free up $5 million in space. And that would be one to me that would make sense, as important as Van Noy has been to this team, because they're so loaded up on young outside linebackers. At some point, you got to let these guys play, whether it's Josh Uche, Chase Winovich, who has one more year left on his deal, or Ronnie Perkins, who they just drafted in the third round. I mean, they're expecting him to play. He didn't see the field at all this year. So, you know, okay, Shaq Mason and Kyle Van Noy, that gets you to $12 million more in space. Now you're up to 15 total, and you still can't bring JC Jackson back on the franchise tag. So this is the kind of offseason it's going to be for them. There are going to be some very difficult decisions to be made. And there may be people out there who are wondering, well, you know, what if you do something with Devin McCourty or Dont'a Hightower? Maybe those guys retire. Those guys aren't under contract right now, so they're not counting against your cap. So if Hightower's not here next year, or McCourty or Slater, you know, these core long-term leadership, culture-establishing, culture-maintaining pieces, they're not even under contract right now. So I think it would be important to at least bring one of those guys back, if not a couple, if you could, in some capacity, whether it's on the staff or on the field. But none of them are counting against your books right now. So these are the difficult decisions that have to get made, because especially if you want to be players is strong, but if you want to bring back JC Jackson and then you want to add other pieces that are going to help you truly help your team, you're going to have to find room. Even bringing back somebody like Jacoby Myers, if you give him that second round tender that Miguel mentioned near the top of our conversation, you know, it's another several million dollars. I believe it's over $4 million if you want to keep him on the second round tender. You know, maybe you give him the quote unquote original round tender, which is the lowest tender. I think that's closer to three. But then you're opening yourselves up to maybe another team out there saying, hey, we like Jakobi Meyers. That guy's, you know, a couple of years ago, I'll pull up his stats right now, but you know, that guy was on pace with Cam Newton to be almost a 100 catch guy. And last season he was an 80 catch, 800 yard guy. I know he only put it in the end zone twice, but you know, you're telling other teams by offering that kind of low tender, that they can have him for just a shade above $3 million, $4 million. We talk about Mac Jones's value. That's incredible value for somebody like Jakobi Meyers. So you're in a bind because of what you did last offseason. You went wild in free agency. You built a team quickly. You built a competitive team quickly. They were not a contending team, but they were a competitive team. But now you're losing pieces potentially from that competitive team, important pieces, whether it's McCourty, Trent Brown, Kyle Van Noy, if he's a cap casualty, Shaq Mason, if he's a cap casualty. And now you have to figure out how to fill in those holes without a whole lot of money to be able to help you do that. Maybe you come back to the question of JC Jackson in the first place. Maybe they let him walk. Now, all of a sudden, you've got, you know, that's $18 million that you don't have to worry about. You don't have to let go of Shaq Mason or Lawrence Guy or Kyle Van Noy. You know, maybe that's a conversation that needs to be had. Shaq Mason, to me, would be a very difficult guy to part with. I thought he was start to finish. He was their best offensive lineman. And if you want to continue to be this ground and pound team that's really based around your running game, who better to do it with than Shaq Mason, who is not making a ton of money, people. He's $6.5 million in base salary next year. So while he would give you the most space if you were to release him, the guy's not breaking the bank. It's not a bad value. It's a great value contract. But that's what you're talking about having to do if you want to bring JC Jackson back and then fill in around the Patriots offense, the Patriots defense, those holes that we know are going to be there. Difficult offseason. Very difficult offseason facing the Patriots, which is why we've got you covered here on Next Pats, which is why the draft is so important. And we will start talking draft very soon. I lobbed a draft question out to the folks on Twitter. You phenomenal, you beautiful people, you beautiful draft freaks out there on Twitter. Very simple question. What do you want to do in the draft? Where do you want the Patriots to go in the draft? We got damn near 700 responses. It might be past 700 now at this point. It is. I'm looking at it now. We got about 750 replies. Quote tweets and replies on that thing. So you guys are hot on the draft, as you should be. This is a critical, critical draft for the second year in a row. No, they're not looking for a quarterback. So the conversations will be a little bit different, but they need help that can play right away and play on those low, low, low rookie contracts. All right. So we'll put a pin in it there for now. Thanks to Miguel Benzin from Pat's Cap. Phenomenal work as always, really clarifying the picture for us. Just how dire it is in some respects in terms of how much money they have to play with and the kinds of tough decisions that will be made this offseason. Thanks to Mark Schofield, of course, Touchdown Wire, USA Today. Phenomenal conversation on Mac Jones and what he can do to maximize his growth going from year one to year two. Next Pats hoping to continue to grow all the time. And that's why we ask you every single week, rate, comment, subscribe, tell your friends. Let's make this podcast as phenomenal as humanly possible, week after week after week. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you guys very soon with likely a little draft talk. It's the Senior Bowl coming up. Time to start percolating on some prospects, people. We'll talk to you soon.